John, good morning.
Good morning. I was just looking back into my records here, which I keep fastidiously erasing, but also on our cats. And when Casey played that song on the morning, just by happenstance, when we had one of our cats pass away, I looked at the date, March 18th, 2013. So
oh
that was
God.
6 years ago that that occurred, that that we lost one of our beloved pets. And it's interesting, that song's playing, and I have a cat right here in my office, Mittens, who is I've become very attached to, and she's sitting here taking a nap. So, and I did want to say that yesterday, Steve, I attended the celebration of life for Sherwood Chillingworth at Santa Anita.
Oh, nice.
And really good turnout there for that. Such a wonderful man. I actually worked under him at Santa Anita, and when back starting in 1993 when I left the racing form and went into TV at Santa Anita, and of course he headed up Oaktree. And so for many years, in fact, Kurt Hoover and I did the entire Breeders' Cup simulcast broadcast, the two of us. There were no producers. There was nobody else. It was Kurt and me. And we did all the Breeders' Cup races live from the walking ring at Santa Anita for the entire nation, other than what you watched on NBC that day. So that was quite a first year in television for me. And Chili was such a class guy, such a wonderful guy, and it's kind of sad that these celebrations of life, that you find out so much more about people that you wish you knew.
Right.
That when they were alive, and he had his children, each of his children spoke, and they were just wonderful. I mean, and one daughter got up there in particular, and she was talking about how her father was so prone to practical jokes. And she said he may have set the world record for the longest practical joke ever played. They had a poster in their home of a matador, and on the poster they called it Chilito. And he would tell his daughter that he was the matador, because one of the things that Chili did during his long career and varied career, he went to various countries, Australia and Spain and many countries, to get the drilling rights for Atlantic Richfield Oil. And so he was telling his young daughter that when he was in Spain, he actually was a bullfighter, too. So she was saying that when she was in the second grade, she took this poster, and she had the poster at the Celebration of Life, so she had it there for us to see. And she says, I take it in at second grade for show and tell, so I'm telling all my classmates how my father was a bullfighter in Spain. And she says this practical joke continued all the way to when she was 21 and a senior in college, and a bunch of college classmates came over to her home, and they're looking at this poster, and she's going, oh, yes, my father was this bullfighter over in Spain. And the mother finally looked at Chili and said, you know, I think you finally better
it's
tell
her. It's long enough. That's very funny.
I mean, the room was roaring. And I'm not even remotely doing this justice, because not only was it a funny story with the poster, but she told it impeccably, and it was just marvelous. And one of the other moving aspects was, and this just made my jaw drop, I never knew this, Chili, I knew, had been born in Hawaii and actually grew
right.
up in his very young years in Hawaii before he came to the mainland. And when he was on December 7th, 1941, he was out on his deck in the morning with some family members when the bombers flew over, unmarked bombers, they called it, at the Celebration of Life. They looked up and said, we saw these unmarked bombers and were wondering what was going on. And, of course, they were headed to Pearl Harbor. And Chili and other members of the male members of his family, they got in their car and drove off to try to help, and actually drove ambulances for people in the Pearl Harbor disaster. So that was rather just moving to hear that they just imagine sitting there on a December morning and looking up in the sky and seeing all those Japanese bombers headed to Pearl Harbor. So that was really something, and he was such a class guy, and boy, just, you know, you just... You say that about a lot of people, but I mean, one of his coworkers came up to me and we were chatting about him. And I mean, we were just saying, and he loved to bet the horses. I mean, the guy, he was a pick six maniac. And they were talking about how, in fact, John Barr, who's been a very prominent person in the California racing industry here for many years, they hit a pick six on a Breeders' Cup in Florida that paid $27,000, and John Barr was saying how one-third of that ticket was the biggest score he's ever had in racing. So, and the kids were talking about, like, one son got up and said, yeah, while other kids are being taught how to throw a curveball or shoot a jump shot, my father was teaching us how to learn fractions and quinella and the term exacta. And another kid got up and said, yeah, a lot of my dad's friends had the same name, Bookie. So, I mean, it was really a well-done celebration of life and, you know, very fitting for such a grand gentleman.
Yeah, and as I've said and discussed with Hammer, you know, when I started coming out regularly to Santa Anita for the show, and you know, particularly the Breeders' Cups, that, you know, there were those two Oak Tree Breeders' Cups, you know, where we broadcast out there, and he was, I think I said he was right out of central casting.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, if they put a call in for a Sherwood Chillingsworth type, you would get Chilly. That's exactly who. That's who would show up. You know, really appropriate. I'm glad that I at least had the chance to know him a little bit. He was an old fashioned gentleman, and you know,
boy, I'll tell you, another
they don't make
one
them
of
like
the
that.
Stories, because it just popped back into my head. He went to Stanford Law. He went to Harvard and then Stanford Law. And so he was a big Stanford football fan, and those kids had more jokes about all the losing years of Stanford football. And it was his dad's dream, one son was saying, you know, for Stanford to play in the Rose Bowl. And so they're playing Ohio State in the Rose Bowl, and this is like the pinnacle of his father's life, and he's been sitting there throughout the game behind this Ohio State rooter, and so they were needling each other back and forth, and it was clear, you know, with about a couple of minutes left in the game that Stanford was going to win the game, and all of a sudden the Ohio State guy he collapsed. And this is back before cell phones and everything, and nobody was doing anything. And so Chilly, unable to see his beloved team actually win the Rose Bowl, he ran off to a payphone to call paramedics, who arrived and saved this guy's life. And, I mean, it was just... And so the son was saying that as they were bringing the guy away in the stretcher, on the stretcher, and he had the oxygen on his face, Chilly looked over at his son and said, you know, this is, that guy would do this all the time, I think, if he was a Stanford fan. I mean, he would have to endure, if this is what happens to him in one football loss, he would have had this happen to him all the time with Stanford through the year. So, I mean, the guy was just, you know, but amazing. He was the one guy that acted, and according to the son, they became lifelong friends, you know, which isn't surprising when somebody saves your life, and especially when you have the football in common to begin with, and so forth. So there were just tons of these stories. I mean, it was really one of the most I mean, I don't want to say entertaining or whatever, but in a way, well, I think Chili would say, you know what, I'm glad if you would say that.
Sure.
It was pretty entertaining.
So, he would appreciate that.
Video and, but those stories from those children, one right after the other, was just, I couldn't believe it, because it was like one child would get up there and talk, and then you'd think, well, that you're the next one, there's no way it's going to be as good as that one, and it would be. So
how many kids did he have?
I want to say, well, let's see, I got Chilean is it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Six kids.
That kind of figures. That
doesn't it though? Yeah, that's,
yeah,
it kind
of does. It kind of does.
So.
Yeah.
But all of them are very accomplished and in their own right, and all had, they had the whole grandchildren. There were, I don't even know how many of those. It was, I'd say about a dozen grandchildren got up and paid a tribute to him too. Yeah. So quite a family man, certainly a giant in California racing, and you know, like I say, you say he was born, I hear, looking at what they gave us, April 16th, 1926, and passed away October 8th, 2019. And just a great, great guy. Richard Mandela was there. Dr. Rick Arthur was there. A lot of people involved in California racing, of course, were there. And
sure.
And in fact, John Barr was the first person to speak, you know, and he's been involved with the TOC and a lot of organizations in California. And he's up there in age himself, and he said, wow, what a turnout for somebody who died in his 90s, because he said he had a relative who died in their 90s, and there were only like 8 people there, because
yeah, exactly. Nobody,
most of the
yeah,
people they knew had yeah. passed away themselves.
Exactly. Well, you were, you know, John, you were referenced in another connection earlier when Blaine Wright visited, and I'm sure you were thrilled to hear what Wright's plan is for this very nice Washington bred, this Baja Sur that he's got his hands on. 5 out of 6. And Blaine Wright has really, you know, kind of stepped to the fore, you know, from Alert Bay, then parlaying into another Twist of Fate, and now, you know, the runner-up in the Juvenile, and a horse that's going to, you know, try for success in the Los Al Futurity. And then that horse on Saturday caught my eye at Golden Gate, Baja Sur.
Well, I'm so proud of Blaine, and I know his father, Richard, is as well. And, of course, I had a big smile on my face when not only the Long Acres Mile got mentioned, but Turbulator, my all-time favorite horse. But, you know, this is another example, Steve, to me, that there are a number of horsemen throughout this country that if they were just afforded the opportunity in terms of getting well-bred stock and expensive stock, like you look at a new d'or, this is a $480,000 Medaglia d'Or out of a Tappet mare. I mean, this isn't some, you know, obscurely bred individual or, you know, inexpensive purchase. And when I made the morning line for the Breeders' Cup, he was kind of a hard one, because you looked at this turf race, you know, first of all, for a 2-year-old to win your first start at a mile is not too shabby, and he wins it by 8. Yes, he only got a 72 buyer, but that's not that bad for a 2-year-old at that time of the year anyway. And, you know, if you want him to run faster than that, what do you want him to do, win by 20? I mean, you know, that's a pretty darn impressive performance, and he's certainly bred for the dirt, being by Medaglia d'Or out of a Tappet mare. So he was kind of a wild card to me, and I made him 15. I know that he was 20 on other lines, but I didn't think he'd probably get bet too much, and he ended up going off at 28, and that's even with the scratch of Maximus, you know, which affected the betting in that race. But an illustration of how perception can affect wagering, Donna Veloce was the big debut winner at Santa Anita, going 6.5 on the dirt, and got a 91 buyer, and she won by a little over 9 lengths. Off that one race, she went off as the 2-to-1 favorite in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies and ran a heck of a race and got beaten a photo, and she finished second. Anou d'Or, he had a big debut win, but it was on the turf at Golden Gate for, you know, someone Blaine Wright, who isn't on the radar with people as much. And, you know, whereas Donna Veloci got a 91 buyer in the debut, a new door gets a 72. So all those factors off of the one race. And if you're taking a shot with a new door, you get 28-1 and he almost wins. With Donna Veloci, you get 2-1 and she almost wins. So I thought it was an interesting parallel by the runners up in both Breeders' Cup Juvenile and the races. In terms of the filly, Donna Veloci, who I think is ultra-talented, and a new door, who certainly proved he's got a lot of talent himself. So, and you were talking about the Los Alamitos Futurity. First of all, it breaks my heart that that race has been downgraded to a 2. That one just kind of rubs me the wrong way with the history of that race, for Pete's sakes. And I'm not talking about ancient history. I'm talking about relatively recent history. So, I mean, even a horse like McKenzie was recently a winner of the Los Alamitos Futurity. So, you know, I mean, that just, I don't understand how they would downgrade that all of a sudden to a 2. But speaking of that race, Honor AP, a horse that's a son of one of your all-time favorite broodmares, I think it looks like he's headed for that race as well. So,
yeah,
and the fact that he'll be there and get to see Honor AP, I think we'll even add more fun for you for your trip to Southern California.
No, looking forward to it. I booked the ticket yesterday the other day, and I was struggling a little bit just because of the way things are laid out this year with Symposium. Usually it's Symposium Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then fly Wednesday from Phoenix to L.A. and broadcast Thursday, Friday, and you know, Saturday race day at Los Al. But this year, though, the way the calendar falls, the Futurity Starlet is before, and Symposium is the 9th, 10th, 11th. So it's a little it's a little wacky. I'm only going to be able to come in on the Thursday night, and I'll broadcast Friday from California, and then I leave Sunday to go to Arizona. But I didn't want to miss it. I've come to really. It'll be a quick trip. Friday, what'll it be? Friday night, Saturday night, Friday and Saturday night, two nights, and then Arizona. But
well, I don't know what you like better, the track or the Catella Deli. I think it's a dead heat.
It's pretty close. It's close. I think we'll go to Catella before, and then sometimes after. I think the Catella has got a fabulous bakery. In addition to the dining room part, they got a spectacular bakery. So I've been known to bring home a baked good or two. They got those cinnamon sugar bagel chips that are quite addicting. So no shortage of options. Quick conversation, and I'm sure we're going to talk to Baffert, if not today, maybe tomorrow, about the result in the Bob Hope. But high velocity, John, on Saturday, and then I reached out to Andrew Lerner. I'm looking forward to talking to Andrew, too, about his win yesterday. Yeah, with Queen BDU, the old topper filly. But High Velocity's performance, I know it was only three foes, but I was very impressed, and it didn't get a big number, got an 80 buyer, but it was the way he did it, and he only really, to me, started to run in the late stages, and I was very impressed with High Velocity despite the modest figure.
Well, I was too, from the standpoint that it looked to me like Drayden rode him very confidently. This was the first time Drayden had ridden him in a race. And, strong constitution's not chopped liver. This is
nice horse.
These constitutions, I mean, boy, I'm just so impressed with them this year. I mean, they're just amazingly, it's just terrific. And, he had run so well against Four Left in the Sunny Slope, and in fact, High Velocity was the early favorite in the wagering, and then Strong Constitution got the late money and ended up going off the slight 4-5 favorite, actually 9-10 to High Velocity at even money. And those two, as Trevor noted, You know, the race between the two favorites was on at the top of the lane. And really, Strong Constitution being on the outside, I mean, I kept thinking, well, it looks like he's going to win. But then I kept looking at Drayden, and it looked to me like he really hadn't pushed the button on High
Nope.
Velocity yet. I mean, it looked like he was kind of toying with Strong Constitution. And so this is one of those races that I agree with you in terms of you better not just sink your teeth into the final time of the race. You better not just sink your teeth into the fire number or whatever thoroughgraph number he gets. You better also just look at the context of how he won that race. And it's a little deceptive. I think his superiority was more than the length and a quarter margin would indicate. So this means, however, no matter how you slice it, he's undefeated. So,
yeah.
I mean, he's done nothing wrong. He's 2 for 2. He's already a Grade 3 winner. And here again, we've got a nice pedigree, a quality road out of a Dixie Union mare. And here again, we've got a pretty expensive sales purchase, $350,000. So, and then the 2-year-old that Bob scratched out of the race, Thousand Words, he's certainly one that we're all eager to see when he comes back and wins. Because his maiden win at Santa Anita, I think it was a little on the deceptive side, too, that he only won by a half a length. He got a decent buyer in 88, but, I mean, you really got the impression that you're just scratching the surface in terms of the talent involved of Thousand Words, who was $1 million Keeneland purchase.
Well, elsewhere, too, in addition to the feature, we should congratulate Don Chatlos, who got his first win for Larry Best. That was with a maiden filly by the name of Monday Call, the Into Mischief, with Mike Smith.
And you know that that had to make Don feel good because
yeah.
You don't want to keep going too long with a prominent client like that to where, you know, you want to get off that snide, and he did. So I know, and I mean, one of my favorite memories was being at that Lone Star Park Breeders' Cup for HRTV at Lone Star when Billy Koch's Red Feather Racing, and they won with Singletary, the Breeders' Cup Mile. And, I mean, that was as enthusiastic a group as I've ever seen in a winner's circle ever. And they were chanting Singletary, Singletary, I mean, at the top of their lungs. And, I mean, I've seen lots of excited people in winner's circles, but, boy, nobody's ever exceeded the enthusiasm of that particular group on that particular day. It was just really memorable. And Don did a terrific job with Singletary. And, again, here's a trainer who's being afforded the opportunity to see what he can do with some very, very well-bred and expensive horses. So so that was good to see. Mike Smith was aboard. You hardly see any offspring of this sire running anywhere. Into Mischief, you know, he's got hardly any foals out there running anywhere. I mean, every time you turn around, you see another one of these Into Mischiefs. It's unbelievable how many of them and how good they are. So, she bounced back off of her disappointing performance in the spin away. And as you say, that was good for Don Chatlos to get that victory with a Monday Call for sure.
You mentioned Billy Koch and the Little Red Feather. They had a win as well. On the card, King Abner, small field, but early in the card, nice allowance win for this one. And I for those that weren't following along on Twitter and elsewhere, it was Coachella. It was Billy's birthday, I think, on either, I don't know, Thursday. It seems like the whole week. It's been like a festival for Billy, who is just is really as crazy as they come. It makes me laugh, but the Coachella, Koch, a cute play on Coachella. And it looked like they had a nice weekend, and they won another race with maybe yesterday too, on Sunday. I was kind of wasn't paying as much attention late yesterday because I was watching the Eagle game, but I did see that one winner, that King Abner, which is a Hanson. Hansen colt won that mile race at the start of the card on Saturday.
You mentioned Queen Bee to you, and certainly a trainer who is making more of a presence here in Southern California is Andrew Lerner. And in the Jay Pribman recap of that race, Lerner said something that I think people don't quite really grasp the significance of, and that is Lerner said, we put the mare in a lot of tough spots, but a lot of those races didn't go. And that's the problem when we get into this horse shortage situation, you know. And that's another one of the reasons I'm sure that Del Mar, when they sat down and made the decision whether or not to run this coming Thursday, in addition to the weather, I mean, you can tell that Del Mar is struggling at this particular time of the year, unlike the summer, where they were able to amazingly run 5 days a week through their summer meeting. I mean, I give them tremendous credit for that. But, you know, they're having a little trouble here getting through this fall meet, as short as it is. And that's just the situation we're currently in here in California. But if you're a horse owner and trainer, it's very difficult because you end up getting forced into kind of running, and, you know, you have two options. If you keep entering somebody, I mean, I know somebody who's entered like a filly in a race through a couple of months, like four or five times, and the race wouldn't go. A lot of times right. It would have like two or three entries, and they finally ended up having to run her in a stakes race because it was either stay in the barn where she'd been for 3 months, or you go ahead and run in a tougher spot. And that's kind of what happens. You get painted into a corner because you get your choices are don't run or, you know, run in a tougher race.
It's challenging.
You really want to. So
yeah,
that's just
it's very difficult, John. And that's a reality not limited just to, obviously, just to California, too. You look at what happened, the funny circumstance that we talked about last week with Trombetta and how, you know, it ended up being fortuitous for him to win the Nashua with Independence Hall, but they had that water main break. They had the water main break at Laurel and they end up canceling. And as a result, they looked at their options and they said, well, we might as well run in the Nashua.
Well, and that's sort of like what you just dealt with Blaine Wright, because he really, you know, his first preference in the Breeders' Cup was to run on the turf because the horse had just run on the turf, but he couldn't get into the turf. So his option was to not run in a Breeders' Cup race or to try the dirt. And that's where he said, you know, we decided to try the dirt. But you're right. I mean, it's the circumstances everywhere, but it's particularly acute right now in Southern California.
I really
feel for a lot of the owners and trainers here because they're very frustrated in terms of, you know, just these races. You know, Jay Pribman noted that here's another compliment to Del Mar, through their summer meeting, Jay made the point a number of times on your show through the summer that the book basically went practically all the time, and it really helps trainers in terms of the fact that, you know, you point for a race and train for a race ahead of time, and the race goes. And, you know, unfortunately at Santa Anita in the recent meets we've had, because, again, the situation there, and especially when you get into the rainy weather of the winter, you know, you have these races in the condition book, but for whatever, horses miss training because of the wet weather or this or that, and all of a sudden a lot of the races in the book don't go. And in order to cobble together a card, you have a whole slew of extras. But, you know, it's so much more effective, and you've got a better chance to get bigger fields the more you can get your races in the book, the condition book, to go. And that was the case with Del Mar through the summer. But, again, you know, now Del Mar, like I say, they're not even in as strong a position here for their fall meeting. So the Bing Crosby meeting.
The stakes part of the calendar with the horses that'll come in from across the country. You know, we had that conversation with Mark Cassie the other day, and I saw where Jay wrote about the Chad Brown runners that are targeting the Matriarch and the Hollywood Derby and the rest of those turf festival races. So they'll finish strong. Second half, you know, it's a quick hit, but the turf stakes will certainly be good. We're going to, John, I appreciate it. I'm going to wrap up, and we'll check in next week.
Very good, Steve. Good to see you, and an early happy birthday.
I appreciate it. Thank you. coming up on Wednesday, and I'm trying to stare it down. I'm a little amazed myself. My father and I were talking yesterday, and you know, he's exactly 30 years younger than me, or older than me, and he had, you know, my parents had me when he was 30. So, you know, he's always 30 years older. So he's 90, and I'm 60. And I said, "Did you ever expect to have a 60-year-old son?" He said, "Well, I expected you'd make it to 60. I thought I'd be dead, but."
Well, I got to tell you, I've already been through that threshold, and I survived it, and I'm impressed that you will as well.
I appreciate it. John White, everybody. Post time, John, and we'll talk next week. We're going to stay right here for the last 15, 18 minutes here to close out a fun Monday, and a conversation I've been looking forward to. Teresa Lignac joining us, because Welder, it has been just spectacular, and the Visualizer 6-year-old, another win on Friday night, this time the Silver Goblin, and he takes advantage of Oklahoma Company on occasion, but he runs just as well against Open Company. Teresa, congratulations. Well done with him.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
You know, it's obviously got to be fun to have a gelding like this, but keeping him in top condition, and you know, you can spot him pretty much anywhere. He runs to the best of his ability, no matter what he's facing.
Well, he's really matured a lot in the last year or so. Now he can come off the pace and sit back and relax a little bit sometimes. And you know, if he gets a bad break or something, he recovers quickly. So it used to be that he, you know, always wanted to pop right out to the front and just go, but he's David has done such a phenomenal job with that horse, and they get along so well, and he's really, really bonded with him. So it makes it fun.
He's won 21 times in 31 starts.
Is that not crazy? yeah.
But for some reason, he still seems sort of underpublicized.
Well, he's an Oklahoma bred, and he's a gelding, and I'm not, you know, a big famous trainer. I'm, you know, I train for one owner, and you know, we stay here in Oklahoma a lot. We kind of feel like Welder is Oklahoma's horse, and he has a great following here in Oklahoma, and people love to see him run, and you know, so we do run a lot right here, and that's probably a lot of it.
Well, this performance on Friday night, he actually gets his most recent triple-digit buyer and his best. He had been running hundreds. This was a 101, and I remember going back to the performance at Hot Springs. You know, when he was third to Whitmore and share the upside. I mean, that's about as serious a company in terms of, you know, stakes sprinters as you're going to face.
And in his defense, we don't stable at the racetrack. We stable at home at my owner's farm. He doesn't like his horses to live at the racetrack, and I respect that. So wherever we go, we haul in. And when the race was there during Hot Springs, the one at Hot Springs, we'd had a lot of bad weather prior to that race, and I had to haul 4 hours to Hot Springs to even get a published work. So, you know, probably, I mean, in his defense, he was certainly not as fit as he is right now, let's say that. So, you know, that in his defense, I he may have even performed better if I would have gotten just a little bit more training in him.
How about that? You know, he came through the kind of a similar, you know, very similar path into the late fall last year, the Silver Goblin as well. Then you gave him a little bit of a winter break. You got the same kind of schedule in mind?
Probably. Last year, I had taken a little hiatus was gone for about 9 months, and there was a couple other trainers in there. And then I had come back and kind of, in my opinion, putting back together. And then he started shining again in the, you know, in the fall. And this year we'll probably do about the same thing. I was hoping that maybe he could break his $1 million mark here at Remington this fall, but, you know, that's to be seen. I don't know if we'll get another race or not. And if not, we'll just wait for Hot Springs.
Well, you mentioned the earnings mark, and he went into Friday night at $928,998,000, kind of a funny number, and he picked up $42,000 in this $70,000 stake. Tell us the backstory and talk about, you mentioned the owner, Ray Max. Mm-hmm. He was bred by Center Hills Farm.
Yeah.
You know, he's by the visualizer. He's out of a Tisnow mare. And,
all route breeding.
Yeah, exactly.
I went to work for Clayton in 2013, and we went and bought a group of horses from Randy Blair at Center Hill Farms, and Welder was one of them. We bought six, and it averaged out to be about $6,400 a piece, and he was one that was in the group. Yeah, and, you know, I've had him his whole life, basically, and, you know, brought him along as a yearling, and he ran twice as a two-year-old, ran a second, and then won, and then I gave him a break, and then, you know, it kind of started rolling for him. And you know, everybody asked me, you know, what's the secret to Welder, and the only secret there is to just keep him happy. You know, that's really the secret to that horse. He wants to do it. You know, he's not ornery or anything, but I mean, he wants to do it his way, and if you keep him happy, he'll give you his soul. I mean, he really will. And him and I are best friends. I spend many hours a day with that horse. So, you know, he's pretty special.
It's apparent. And with maturity, I mean, this has been a terrific year for him. He's made close to $400,000, and what is he now? 7 for 9 this year. You really have not experimented with him either in terms of distance. You haven't even thought about some 7/8 or, you know, trying some different things with him.
You know, the 6.5 on Friday night. I mean, David stood up.
Yeah.
Before the finish line, and he was like, okay, well, you know, we won, and there, you know, if you see the pictures, you know, Wilder's ears are pricked, and he's looking forward, and David, you know, he's just kind of coasting in, and you know, he's just so comfortable at that 6, you know, furlong distance that, you know, I guess it's not broke, you know, so why fix it? I guess. You know, and he's made his almost $1 million the hard way. I mean, we've done it in smaller stakes, most of it, you know, right here in Oklahoma. And you know, he's not a fantastic shipper. You know, he likes to be home. You know, he loves his big stall at the farm, and you know, he just really thrives there, and trailering him a long way, he just, you know, he's just not real happy with that. Let's say that.
Would you, are you thinking about another run to Oaklawn and you know, that series of sprints, very lucrative, and you would
absolutely
think that, yeah?
Yes, I absolutely, we will be at Oaklawn this next year. I feel like he's really at the top of his game right now. I don't know if you follow weights on horses, but from the beginning of Remington until this race that he ran Friday night, he's gained 100 pounds.
Jesus.
So he's thriving. He's just, you know, he's really feeling great and training great, and I feel like we'll be going into Hot Springs ready to win some races.
Well, for those that have not had a chance, I mean, any of his replays of his 21 wins, I mean, it is amazing. I do find, I've been wanting to call you, Teresa, for months.
Oh,
I mean, I'm a little interested anyway in Remington, and so the horses, you know, that come out of the Oklahoma program catch my eye, and I, you know, the wins were starting to pile up with him, and you know, then that race at Oaklawn in March really was the one that I said, yeah, this is a serious horse. This is not just a nice Oklahoma bred.
Well, and that, you know, I've had lots of, you know, you always have your haters, but I've always had, you know, I've had some people say, well, you know what, he's just a really nice Oaks bred. And I always tell them, you know what, you're right. He is a really nice Oklahoma bred. And he's a really nice Oklahoma bred that honestly could run anywhere.
Yeah, no, it's clear. You don't run 100, 101 buyers that you can take that any place.
And he, you know, he came back, you know, even, well, like Friday night, you know, we got done and we haul into the receiving barn and, you know, we get done and he comes out of test barn, gets on the trailer and, you know, we drive home and the next day he's bucking over his head in the stall. I mean, that race took nothing out of him. I was really surprised at how well he came back from the race. I mean, he just, you know, drags you into his stall and sticks his head in his feed bowl and, you know, he's ready for the next adventure. I mean, he's such a cool horse. I'm so blessed. I really can't even tell you. It's been a great ride.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing with him is, and I'm just sort of speculating, is he at his best at Will Rogers? Is that,
you know,
where
that's his home track. The farm that we train at is about a mile from the stable gate.
Okay.
And when we haul over there, because that's where we get most of our works, and, you know, we train over there a lot, because it's close. We have a track at the farm, but that's, you know, it's a big mile track over there. And I don't even take him off the trailer. Like, we don't even go in the receiving barn there. We drive over. We have a nice, a beautiful 6-horse turbo, and he just stands in the trailer and waits to gallop or train or whatever he's going to do, and we, you know, tack him, and he comes off the trailer and goes and chains and cools out and goes right back on the trailer. I mean, he's... You know, I think a lot of people wouldn't believe it, but really, I mean, we don't do anything, you know, there's no fancy stuff going on here. Really not.
It's a great story, and I'm just adding it up quickly. He's 9-for-10 at Will Rogers.
Yes. When I took my little hiatus, they got him beat, which was heartbreaking, but, he loves that place. He does. And they love him there, too. You know, it's a lot like Remington. He's got a following there. People come out there to, you know, to watch him run. And you know, the backstory on his name, I always try to tell this because it's kind of neat. Clayton, the gentleman that owns Remax, he was a welder. That's what he did as a trade.
That's great.
And now he owns a big custom welding company type oil refinery business. They work in the refineries. And when we bought the group of yearlings, he said, I really want to name a horse Welder. I just think that's such a great name. And I said, well, let's name that Gray Gelding Welder. You know, he's gray, that'll, you know, steel gray, blah, 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 you know. And so we did. And how neat that he's turned out to be the horse that he is, you know, with that name. It's cool.
That's great. And, you know, talk a little bit about your background, too, while we've got a chance.
Well, there's not much... There's not much exciting there. I've only been training racehorses about 5 or 6 years. I did show horses for about 25 before that and went all over America and showed horses. And when I came to work for Clayton, I was actually running the barn for him there in Oklahoma. And he said, you know, he said, I really want to do racehorses. And he said, you think you could train racehorses? And I said, well, Clayton, I don't know anything about racehorses. I mean, I know horses, but I don't really know. He said, and it was in the fall, and he said, well, you know what? The Will Rogers meet starts in March. Have your trainer's license, and we'll go get some racehorses.
Unbelievable.
Oh, okay. Well, okay. So that's exactly what I did. And
that's
it's, you know,
great.
Just, yeah. You know, but horses are horses. Racehorses, show horses, they're horses. And if you know horses, and, you know, it's just horses. So I kind of dove in with both feet, and we've had a lot of success. And I've got some nice babies coming up, and I'm excited about them. And, you know, it's really been a great experience.
Well, there's plenty of people that have gone their whole lives and won't have a horse like this. And
I know, I'm aware. I truly am. I get it. I really understand that. I'm so blessed, you know. But and again, you know, I've really taken care of Wilder. I mean, I'm very conscientious of, you know, how often he runs and you know, where he runs, and I really do try to do my best. I have not over-campaigned him, that's for sure.
No, it spreads. It's about eight, nine starts a year, and it's obvious. I mean, you when you see him, when you see video, when you see, you know, pictures. I mean, he obviously takes care of himself, and gelding like this, you know, they make. I don't want to say they make it easy, but they know their limits, and they'll tell you in their own way pretty clearly.
Well, I don't really believe in fast works. That's not my cup of tea. I've never gotten a check for one yet, so I tend to not.
That's a good line.
In the morning, I mean, you'll see his works. A lot of people are like, "What is up with these wrapped up works?" And I always tell him, I mean, we know he's fast. I don't have to prove that.
You don't have to see it in the morning. You're right.
Yeah,
you're right.
Why tear him up?
I mean, I love it.
And he's, you know, David has really, you know, kind of bonded with him and got him figured out. And like he said the other night with Rince of Gun, he said, "I was going to take him back and, you know, kind of try to just let him run off the pace." And Wilder said no. So, I mean, he kind of does what he wants to do. And in the race prior to this one, when he didn't get out of the gate, he spotted him about five lengths. And I thought, well, if he's going to get beat, that's how it's going to happen. And then he said, "No, I'm not going to get beat today."
No, he doesn't get beat.
Circle the field.
No, he doesn't get beat too often. I'll put up a video for those. You got to follow the story of Wilder. Teresa Lunick, I can't thank you enough.
No, I really appreciate the recognition. Thank you for being interested in our Okie Bred. We love him.
And we'll see him at Oaklawn. This winter. Looking forward to it. Teresa Lunick joining us as well. Obviously, earlier today, the Gary Gullo visit, and Blaine Wright, John White, Johnny D. What a fun morning. Hope you enjoyed it. Some good action today. There's actually a great maiden special at Big Bulky Field at Finger Lakes today, the 6th. I got to look at this. 12-horse field. Two-year-old fillies going 5.5. There's a good allowance, too. Good luck wherever you're playing today. Back tomorrow, Andy Serling and a whole bunch more. We still got plenty of people to catch up to, like Andrew Lerner. Want to get Andrew on, and we need Baffert, too, and much more. I got to go take care of the kitchen. Talk to you in the morning. Replay 6 to 9 here on Sirius XM.